Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. This is not Daniel Bader. We'll talk about that in just a moment. This is Andrew Martnick, and I am recording here 396. We are rapidly approaching episode 400, and we have no idea what we're going to do for that milestone. But I know that one or two of these fine gentlemen will be joining me on episode 400, I'm sure. We have Jerry Hildenbrand.
Hey, y'all. What's up?
And we have Russell Hawley.
Hello.
That's 3 weeks away, folks. Assuming that we stick with somewhat of a reasonable schedule here. Episode 400. I remember when we recorded a special intro, I think, for 100, when Phil was still running the podcast. Do you remember that, Jerry?
Yeah.
I put a bunch of phones on my face and shouted the word 100 into a camera. I did not even work here at the time. Phil just asked me to.
Yeah.
And I just did it.
Now, the thing is, I don't remember doing anything for 200 or 300, but we had to have done something.
I don't recall.
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember.
Well, we're going to have to really step it up for 400 and maybe episode 420 as well.
I think we should skip a week.
Just
and make sure that episode 400 happens in that second week of October, because I hear there's something happening that week that may be worth discussing.
Okay, do we want to just lead off with that? That's really the big thing coming out of IFA here. We were expecting Google to drop an announcement for an event for the first third of October. They've gone with October 4th the last couple times. They pushed it back about a week, October 9th. And it's going to be in New York City, whereas it's been in San Francisco the last couple times. And this is it. This is going to be where they announce the notch, Russell, right? I mean, that's the only thing that matters?
Unless there is no notch. Unless it's all a conspiracy because, Google
and their
criminal masterminds have made fake phones that they have shipped across the world to be left in Lyft cars and sold to German websites.
Goodbye, y'all. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, Russell, now you have to give them a quick rundown of this, because
this is just my favorite thing of the whole week. It really has just been my favorite thing. So here's how this goes. We've seen a couple of leaks of the Pixel 3 XL, and there are a couple things that make us realize pretty much up front that this is definitely the Pixel 3 XL. First, the notch cutout for all of these leaked photos exactly matches the notch UI cutout that was in Android P, like from the very first developer preview.
Yeah.
Where they were like, hey, we're going to support notches. And one of the notches was like this great big weird rectangular notch. And we were all like, man, I really hope that's not the Pixel 3 XL. And it turns out that it is. And I mean, like, the cutout is exact. There's no, Google has been planning for this notch size from the beginning. And as well as a couple other notch sizes, like the Essential Phone was in there and a few other designs were supported from the beginning. And the whole idea was to make it easy for developers to manufacturers to kind of, support their own design in there as they were planning UI cutouts and things like that. But that notch size has been there from the beginning. So there's no doubt that this is actually the Pixel 3. But a YouTuber and who is going to go unnamed, and then a few other sites have jumped on this conspiracy theory that Google has planted fake phones around for leaks to make their way into the news that have these notches, so that when the Pixel event actually happens, Google can climb on stage and be like, ha, got you, both phones have no notches and they're super cool. And that's just, it's patently insane. Like, it's not, that's just not how any of this works. Google is not some mastermind when it comes to keeping leaks from entering the stream of consciousness.
Nope.
As we've seen literally every year for the past decade. It's not a thing for any of this to be, this grand conspiracy, but it is. We are probably getting a Pixel 3 XL with a fairly substantial notch and maybe a little bit of a chin on the bottom for the speaker, and a Pixel 3 that looks more like the Pixel 2 XL that we have right now, where it's taller right. and it has a little bit of a chin and a forehead, but not nearly as pronounced as the Pixel 2 is right now.
And that phone, that the regular Pixel 3, looks real nice.
It really does.
I am all about that phone.
And as far as the Pixel 3 XL notch goes, like I get it. Now that I've seen a close-up photo of it, they're keeping the front-facing speakers.
Yeah.
And that's why that notch is there. And like I don't dig notch phones. Like I'll be upfront with that. But if you're going to do that and then also not sacrifice like one of the big things that makes your phones popular in the first place, and I hate to say it, you know, people are like, oh, Pixel phones, it's all about the software and stuff like that. I can't tell you how many phones I hold all year long, like the Samsung phones, where the audio quality suffers because of the way that the front of the phone is designed. And Google's not backing down on that. And I appreciate them trying. You know, maybe it's not going to be successful. I'm probably not going to dig it. But I appreciate them making sure that that front-facing speakers are not going away, because I think they're important.
And I think that has been the argument, well, from sane people all along, is that, well, okay, if you're going to put the notch there, don't pull an Asus and just have a gigantic notch just for looks because you're crazy, but put something up there. And Google is sticking with a single camera on the back, but dual cameras on the front. And that's kind of interesting to me, not because I take selfies, but it's just interesting from a market kind of, dynamic or something like that, because not a lot of companies have gone with dual cameras and on the front. And Google is already doing a fantastic job with their processing of front-facing camera shots for their portrait mode.
Two cameras on the front makes sense if you look at the new APIs for the camera that support dual cameras. It has a switching feature, I'll call it a switching feature, where you can create a virtual camera that can grab an image just as if it were a real camera, and you can use it for effects, like portrait effects.
Yeah, so that was part of Android Pi, Android P developer preview, having new dual camera APIs. And that also applies to the rear cameras facing right. up front, for manufacturers to be able to, you know, kind of take white label dual camera systems and not have to do a whole bunch of fancy processing in order to be able to do portrait mode. And it let them get, live video or, right. you know, like a live feed from both cameras at once, for example.
And it helps like Qualcomm. They know what to expect, you know, when they right. build out the software for their image processing. So it helps everybody by having a standard. So
beside the notch, I don't have any strong feelings about this design. It looks very similar to the Pixel 2 XL. It's just a little more rounded, a little smaller bezels everywhere else. They went with, it seems like, a glass back that's kind of textured or frosted or something like that all the way down, so that it has wireless charging as well, which is one of the things a lot of people have complained about. I mean, I could take it or leave it, whatever. But this isn't dramatically... I wrote something interesting. Well, I thought it was interesting anyway, that they didn't do anything here to appease the haters, really. And by putting a notch in there, they really didn't do anything to appease the haters. But if you didn't like the Pixel 2 XL's design, the Pixel 3 XL isn't some dramatic departure, right, Jerry? It looks like it's kind of more of the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, absolutely. You wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's what you should expect.
Other than the glass material on the back, you look at the back of this thing, you would have no idea you're looking at the new phone versus right. the old phone.
Well, you know.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's a little softer. I guess that's a picky thing.
A little more rounded, you mean?
Yeah,
like a little softer edged?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I guess maybe it's just because I've spent so much time with the 2 this year, because it would like this is the first Google phone that I haven't put down halfway through the year. I've just kept using.
That's
much
a hot
to
take.
Jerry's chagrin, because he keeps trying to steal the blue one from me.
If it's mine, it's not steal. It was given to me, yet held away from me where I couldn't reach it.
It's true. I'm a monster. But yeah, I guess it's because I've kept using it. But when I saw the new design for this, I kind of felt like the back was different enough from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 that you could probably spot them out. But I guess now that, like, hearing you say that out loud, it's probably true that if you sat them down on a table, most people would not look at them and be like, oh yeah, that one's the 3.
Right.
I just my beef with the XL is, well, it's too big for me. That's the same beef every year. Well, now the small Pixel is just as big, and now it's skinny and tall, and I hate it.
So the rumor is that the Pixel 3 will have a 5.4-inch display at the standard kind of 18:9 aspect ratio, and then the 3 XL will be 6.2-inch.
Jesus.
19:9. So figure that's going to be about the size of a Galaxy S9 Plus. Very similar aspect ratio as well.
The HTC Evo 4G had a 4.3-inch screen, and we all went ape crazy over how big it was.
Well, what has this world come to? A lot of that was not the screen size so much as the resolution that matched it. And that's a weird conversation to have, because yes, we were like, man, this phone is so big, but also this phone is so big and the UI does not match how big the screen is, so everything just looks clownishly big.
Right.
All of the buttons were huge and all the text was huge on that phone. So it didn't, it was more than just the screen was bigger. It was the screen was bigger and everything was comically and needlessly large on it because the software just wasn't ready for it.
So Jerry, are you worried about, you're worried about 5.4 inches in the standard Pixel 3?
I could probably deal with the size. I didn't actually
that sounds
mind
perfect to me.
Carrying a Note back, you know, the Note 4, Note 5 days. So it's not necessarily so much the size, it's the aspect ratio. I can't get into these skinny phones, and it's because I've got a big, chubby hand.
Yeah, the aspect ratio conversation, we talked about this early on when everything started going to at least 18:9, and you kind of have to reframe your thoughts about what matters in the shape and design of a phone, because you can't reach the top of these devices. Once you get to about 5.4 inches and 18:9, it's not comfortable to reach the top, and it can be a little awkward to hold it if it's thin, in terms of the back, and narrow from side to side. That's one thing that was always interesting about a lot of the Pixel phones and Nexus phones, that they did have large chins on the bottom. And it kind of made it easier to reach the main parts of the UI. Now, Nobody wants to hear that argument because they think death to all bezels, which I just don't exactly understand.
Death to all bezels gets you a 4-inch notch like the Pixel 3 XL. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I just feel like we're at a point where there's no more arguing the notch. Like, people have chosen which side they're on, and they're just stuck there. Now the question will be, you know, how many people end up just buying the notch and dealing with it? Buying the notched version Pixel 3 XL and dealing with it. I don't know, but I think it was kind of telling to me that when we were at IFA last week, we went over to the LG booth, and they have, of course, the G7 and the new G7 One on display there. Every single one of the demo units had the hide the notch turned on, where it puts a little black bar across.
And I think they're the only company to, like, really do that so far, right? Like, when I first saw LG do that in software, I kind of figured that was going to catch on. But
yeah,
seem like it has.
Huawei then added it in the P20 Pro, but it's not... It's something weird, like it's a different theme, or it's not on by default or something like that. Whereas I think LG actually ships it on by default.
That's so stupid.
They also are ridiculous and call it the new second screen. So, you know,
if you're going to put a notch there and then by default the UI makes it look black like it's part of the bezel, just put a damn bezel up there.
Yeah, exactly. That's my funniest thing is, when you look at these photos of the Pixel 3 XL, it, just like any other notch phone, it's not specific to the Pixel, you look in the top left and the top right and there's information there. You're getting the clock, and you're getting the battery and notifications and all your status indicators. Why would you want to black that out and push everything down again? And now you're back to what you complained about so much before, which was large bezels, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't dig a notch because I instantly see that marketing talk to engineering, and they talk to the people who are designing it. And one part of the company wants one thing to be able to say the screen is so huge, and the other part says, well, we can't do that, and then you end up with a notch. So, you know, that's, I just don't care for that. But if you're going to have one, at least use the screen that's left on the sides. Come on, LG.
Right. One thing that did not change in the hardware, there's still no headphone jack, but yeah. Google is actually doing something right and including a pair of headphones that are USB-C headphones. I mean, yes, it still sucks that there's not a headphone jack, but it was absolutely insane for Google to put out phones with USB-C audio only and really, 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 really not seed the market for USB-C headphones.
Yeah, because it was a while after the Pixel 2's launch that we started getting USB-C headphones, like wired headphones that were actually like good and worth using. Yep.
Or just worked at all.
Yeah, because like, you know, Apple had included a set with their phone, so there wasn't like a huge third-party need there. But yeah, Google, you know, that was a mess for a while that people were deeply frustrated with.
Oh, but we all we were all just going to buy Pixel Buds, right, Russell? So,
oh, man, you know what? I still have not actually used Pixel Buds.
I use them now and then,
and I still really want to use the live translation feature. But
well, that's
maybe we'll get a generation
because you
two.
Haven't done it yet.
I mean, I think that because I have a house full of kids that all speak yes. different languages, and my brain can't handle it, but. But yeah, I know that it hasn't, those were also not particularly warmly received. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of headphones released with the Google Assistant setup, mm-hmm. over the past year, but I haven't really seen one particular brand stand out as kind of like the default that people lean to.
No, it's kind of just been an added thing that like people aren't making their buying decision based on that. Right.
Yeah.
Which surprises me because it's a very popular feature on the phone, and putting it in a set of, you know, wireless headphones is smart. You can keep your phone in your pocket. You never need to touch it.
And unlike the wired, the, you know, USB wired headphones, those were available at launch for the yeah. Pixel 2. Because we actually got a pair, Google gave us a pair of Libretones with
yep.
yeah.
With our Pixels when they launched last year. So yeah, very, very unusual.
But for what we're expecting to be a really expensive phone, it just it always screams of kind of cheaping out if you don't include headphones. So it just makes sense to have them in there. They look like they, you know, they're a basic pair. They kind of borrow a little bit of the Pixel Buds design, actually, and use the same kind of nice cable that they use in
the ear loop
USB-C cable. Yes. The little, I mean, I don't know. It looks like they're adjustable like the Pixel Buds, which... Some people didn't like that, but I really liked it. They're really comfortable in the ears. Although
it's a throwback to the design for the single earbud that was included with Google Glass.
Yes, it is.
That corded loop, and it remains my favorite thing that I yep. don't understand why more companies don't do. It really just, maybe Google has a patent on it. I genuinely don't know, but every time I've used it in anything, they've been fantastic. They stay in my ear way longer than... you know, Apple's, just plastic nubbins or anything like that. They just don't stay in my ear, but these always do.
And also, these are white soft touch material, so they will be terribly, you know, discolored and gross in about 5 seconds after taking them out of the box, which would be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Keep somebody from borrowing your headphones.
Yeah, they just recoil as soon as they see them. Do you guys have anything else about the Pixel 3 or 3 XL that's particularly standing out to you? Nothing's really catching my eye.
I can tell you that I really hope Google just continues to double down on software-based solutions for stuff, because I think we're going to hear a lot of hardware-based camera bragging. We've complained, and I say complained, kind of loosely, that it didn't really feel like Samsung made any tremendous strides in their already excellent camera when it came to like the Note 9 launch and stuff like that. And so their camera is already one of the best, and the Pixel is still, you know, one of the best cameras that you can use a full year later. I hope that they're able to just keep that, you know, pushing that forward. You know, the software enhancement that we've seen to Android Pie, you know, doing the whole, you know, we're just going to reach in and play with notifications for you because it's helpful. And I want to see more of that. I want to see more of this phone doing stuff for me.
Yeah, I these are the kind of things that we see at the Pixel launch event rather than at the Pi, you know, launch announcement. I think of little things like the identifying ambient music on the lock screen, the way that the calendar and weather information is kind of pulled into the launcher subtly, the way that it handles notifications and do not disturb. Those little things, I agree, really add up to a nice... you can't point to a bunch of individual ones and say, oh, you know, this changes my life. But it's all these little, just are purely software solutions that you don't really see anywhere else. How about you, Jerry?
Well, I'm with Russell. I would love to see some AI put into their camera software. You know, tells you when you have the image framed right, you know, that looks good. And, you know, that kind of thing, because unfortunately, LG and Samsung didn't follow along and use a single camera and try to do things the same way, because I think that would have been a blockbuster if you have Samsung and Google and Qualcomm and LG all working on software solutions for photography. It would have been so much better than it is now. But Google, there's still room for Google that they can do their thing. You know,
yeah.
Not necessarily to improve the photos, because the Pixel, even the first Pixel, took great pictures. Yeah, I don't want to see them not get better, but there's other stuff they can do besides, you know, give you a little bit, tiny bit better image.
So that's a really good point, because all of these other manufacturers, I especially think of Samsung, LG, and Huawei, they have this quote unquote AI in their camera, but it's not being used necessarily any differently than, you know, historically the last few years. Like, the way that the photos come out of these cameras is, you know, artificial intelligence in a way. It has to make decisions about how to expose this and, you know, standard camera stuff. But the only parts that they call AI are, you know, scene detection and object detection that doesn't really do a whole lot that you can really tell.
Right.
So that's why they have to try to throw a brand on it and say, oh, this is the AI or the Bixby or the ThinQ or whatever Huawei calls it.
That's the thing, though. They already can, you know, detect a book or a glass of milk. They can already see a scene, check the lighting. Why not give some information to the users and help us take better pictures?
Yeah, all we're getting is you get a little indication in the camera interface that's a little dot that shows, you know, a picture of a plant or a picture of a dog, and you're like, well, no shit, I'm taking a photo of a plant or a dog. I know what this is.
Yeah, you kind of assume you know what you're pointing the camera at.
Right. And if I don't, it doesn't matter. I just want to take a photo of it. You know, you don't need to make this, you know, there's Google Lens, which is, you know, object recognition to tell you about the thing that you may not know about. But we're talking about in the main camera interface where it doesn't really matter what you're pointing it at. You just want it to analyze the photo or the analyze the frame and take the best possible photo of that. It doesn't matter if the AI puts two and two together and says, oh, I know that this is a dog. You just need it to take the best possible photo of the scene. And that's where I feel like they've kind of lost the plot a little bit. Even though I know that Samsung and Sony and LG, all these different companies are already doing tons of very advanced image processing algorithms and, I mean, artificial intelligence, I guess you could call it that. But, you know, and we know that Google is as well, especially when you look at how well they process portrait mode photos with a single camera. But I wonder if Google will go in that direction where they say, oh, we have all these advanced shooting modes or something like that.
I hope so. I mean, Russell and I thought it was hilarious that, you know, the camera on our phone could identify extra large rubber ducky. We saw this big, huge.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, and Google Lens, that's what it told us what it was, and then told us where we could buy one, even though we were standing in front of one and could have bought it. If it knows this, if it can already process this information, let's do something helpful with it.
Exactly. So Jerry and I were talking about this before the podcast started. Per usual, we have all our great thoughts before we hit record. This is, I mean, if history has shown us anything, this is going to be a little bit more than just a Pixel 3 and 3 XL launch event. So last year, they went all out crazy. We got the Pixel Buds, Pixel Book, Google Home Max, Google Home Mini, and a handful of other random accessories and things, which was way more than we could have ever expected going into it, thinking like this was the Pixel 2 and 2 XL launch event. This year, maybe not so much. Jerry, do you have any, you know, ideas? I mean, you seem to think that maybe we're not going to see, maybe we won't see such a huge event and it'll be more focused on the phones.
I'm pretty sure we're going to see some other products from Google. I just don't think we're going to see them on the 9th.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I get a gut feeling and I see some clues and some people were talking. Expect a Chromecast refresh, of course. Definitely needs one. There's some space for, you know, improvements to Google Home, maybe a new look, maybe a new, you know, those ones from NVIDIA that plug in your wall sockets. We never saw those. That'd be pretty sweet, something like that. But I just don't get the impression that the divisions in Google that build that stuff are rushing to get anything ready by the 9th.
So and you could say the same for VR stuff too. I mean, I don't, we got Daydream Standalone kind of separate from the normal refresh, and that's not ready for new stuff anytime soon. I don't think we're getting a big update to Daydream. And even if we did, I don't think the 3 XL with its notch is going to be super fun to use. I want
a VR headset with a notch on the side.
Yeah, I think that they're going to crop the screen in order to make that work, and that's going to be kind of weird and problematic for other reasons. But I'm not really sure how any of that's going to play out for VR and AR stuff. I'm sure that we will hear more about augmented reality because that was a big thing last year.
And Google's so good at it and didn't ever do anything with it.
Yeah, we got the AR stickers were fun, but they certainly didn't enter the mainstream as far as regular use. It wouldn't shock me to see a Google version because we got the stickers, the Mi stickers. It wouldn't shock me to see a live version of those to you know compete with Apple's Memoji thing. That got announced using augmented reality for that. The problem with those compared to the way that Apple does things from Google's perspective is Google's stuff is all post-processing. So the front-facing camera grabs your image or the rear-facing camera grabs stuff and then it does cool software stuff and then lays stuff over. It's not a whole lot of real time. And that's Apple's whole thing. Because they're using hardware, it's a lot easier for them to do stuff with augmented reality in real time, especially when it comes to your face, the facial mapping stuff.
Yeah.
So if they're able to recreate that stuff using just software and also do it in real time, that's going to be a huge punch to Apple's ego because they once again are able to do stuff in software that Apple had to do with hardware.
I don't see them doing that, Russell, because I don't see Google releasing something that only works with certain phones.
You mean like they did with Pixel stickers or AR stickers?
Yeah, and look how popular that was. You know, it's,
well, I wouldn't shock me to see them do something and then find a way to work it into the Google keyboard like we did with the most recent stickers.
Okay, yeah. Mm. Look, I feel that maybe you're right.
So I don't think that we're up for, you know, any major Google Home refreshes like Jerry was saying, but do you think that they could announce some sort of a smart display or make some kind of announcement about smart displays? Like, hey, by the way, all of these different smart displays are actually coming out, you know, something like that. I mean, we're not due for new hardware necessarily in terms of like a Google Home refresh. Those things are pretty locked in.
I'd like to see a feature update, even though the smart displays are new. I would like to see them address the serious lack of video calling.
Yeah,
because I'm not going to use Duo. Like, just get over it. First of all, it's tied to a single phone number, which means I can't, like, my kids can't use it the same way that I could use it and have it all make sense.
Right. There is something to be said for Google using this big hardware launch event or whatever, this launch event stage, to really introduce the world to these smart displays, which got announced like completely non-working at CES and then kind of trickled out with the Lenovo smart display kind of being the front runner. This would be a good time for them to say, you know, by the way, you can use your Pixel 3 XL to set up your Lenovo smart display or, you know, such and such smart display.
Well, video calling is the sore spot.
But it's kind of the only sore spot, which is impressive.
I've got a Lenovo, the bigger, the 10-inch one here. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I really love the fact that I can shut the camera and microphone off. That's why I bought it in the first place. But it just works. It works exactly as you would expect it to.
Until, I need to get one.
Until my wife wants to make a video call.
Right. I mean, like, one of the biggest things that I did when I, because I had the Amazon Echo Show in the kitchen until I replaced it with the smart display. And one of the most commonly used things every single week, because I'm a slacker, but I would be out grocery shopping and I would be in an aisle and be like, I can't remember if we need this or not. And I would call home and one of the kids would answer in the kitchen and I'd be like, you know, go check and see how much cereal we have or something like that. And I would do stuff like that all the time where I knew that I could call home and have them answer with video and show me. And you know, that thing was always in the kitchen. And it was just about the closest thing to a home phone that my kids have ever had.
I get it. I get why it's not how we want it, because do we really want some third-party service having access to all that information that's in our Google account? Probably not, at least not under Google's terms.
I mean, so they have to fix necessarily. It doesn't necessarily have to be a third-party service. I think that your guys' only complaints are with the fact that it uses Duo as if Duo were on two personal phones.
Right.
Right.
And these are not personal phones. They're inherently used by multiple people. So the technology is solid. And I think that anybody who's made a Duo call, especially after they worked out a lot of the initial kinks, knows that it does a really good job. But you can't have it be tied to a single account or a single device,
Since, you know, Google used to throw virtual phone numbers at everybody who wanted one.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I still use one.
Same here. And that's the real problem, is that I can't, like, it's Lenovo smart display in my house is attached to my account, which means when I'm not at home, I can't call me.
No,
on Google Duo.
It's horrible.
That's right. Yeah, it's, and you don't want to, I mean, a lot of people have gotten into this problem of you trying to manage multiple accounts in Google properties and they just really don't work. But you start building like dummy accounts, you know, it's
if
familyroom@gmail.com or, you know, whatever. Well, we're kind of getting into the weeds here, though. That has nothing to do with hardware. But the last little bit of potential news, not news, is there's a rumor that we won't be seeing a Pixel Watch this year, let alone just in this October 9th event. This is relevant to a discussion we're going to have later talking about the Galaxy Watch. But this was always kind of a light rumor. We'd never really had any solid information on Google doing its own Pixel Watch or whatever. And then all of a sudden there was this report that it's not going to happen.
I'm glad.
Me too. Because
am too.
We are probably maybe right around a week away from Qualcomm telling us all about the next Wear processor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not enough time to optimize that, so that it's a functional product. And I feel like, you know, if this was a product that was slated for release, I feel like something happened with Qualcomm's timetable to push things back, and someone at Google said, we just don't have enough time. We don't want to release a half baked product. Let's just not do it.
Yeah.
And so it got shelved. And if that ends up being what actually happened, I'm all for that.
Right. I think the big question that I'm sure people inside Google ask themselves is, what purpose would this thing serve when every single Android Wear OS by Google Watch has the same basic internals. It's all going to be, it was all standardized on Snapdragonware 2100. It's all going to be standardized on the next Snapdragonware processor. There's no real need for this reference design type of device when all of these watches are already running a very similar platform and even similar buttons for interactions. They've almost all, if not all, gone to circular displays. I mean, this quote from this Google representative said, to think that a one-size-fits-all watch makes sense, I don't think we're there yet. Which completely makes sense when you look, I mean, go back and listen to our last podcast from IFA, where Alex and Michael and I talk about how there are, you can go over to the Fossil Group booth and you can see 40 different designs of Wear OS watches that all have the same platform inside, but they have all these different designs and sizes and appeals to different parts of the market. You have crazy watches, you know, like the Tick watch and like the Casio watch that use these dual layer displays. There's just not really a need for Google to do its own watch, right?
I hate to say this, but the software is not there yet. There's I don't understand why people.
That is a very not hot take, because I feel like that's just known by everybody. Well,
I'm not sure why iPhone users love the Apple Watch, and not that it's hugely successful. They're not selling 50-60 million of them every quarter, but it's immensely more popular than any product that runs Wear OS or Samsung's Watch OS. But Apple has done something to make the people who have an iPhone and are embedded in the ecosystem enjoy the product. And yes, you have a lot of people who love their Wear OS watch or their Samsung Tizen watch, but the average consumer doesn't need it, doesn't care. And that's what Google has to fix. Give me a reason to wear this big hulking Huawei watch that I've got. It's been sitting on the charger for 4 months.
And that comes, like you said, in the software, not right. In releasing its own watches. I mean, we saw with the LG Watch Sport and LG Watch Style, that was kind of a little bit of a kick, you know, a kick in the pants to manufacturers, say, hey, look, we can make these nice looking round watches with this rotating side button thing. But they really didn't need to do that. It wasn't necessary. I mean, of course, those weren't Pixel watches by name, but if you look at them and you see, you know, how the partnership worked, those were Google watches just manufactured and branded by LG. But we're going to see this new processor, or, well, learn about the new processor. There's not really a whole lot to look at. And
check out this copper square.
Yeah, we had, it's always difficult talking about processors. You need images for these articles and, you know, they don't exist, but to Russell's point earlier, these watches aren't going to be coming out with this new processor immediately.
No.
This is going to be something where Qualcomm's announcing it and we're talking 3-4 months down the road.
Oh, you're not going to see a watch for sale with it in it till March or April of 2019.
Yeah, people are kind of giving manufacturers, kind of giving them the needle a little bit, saying, oh, you announced a new, you know, quote unquote, new watch a week before Qualcomm's going to announce a new processor. But these watches were put in development 4 or 5 months ago, and they didn't even have any idea. Qualcomm's not picking up the phone.
That kills me. We'll see a Nexus or a Now Pixel or OnePlus. Well, why'd you use the Snapdragon 835? The new one's coming out next summer. Well, okay, you want them not to sell a phone this year?
Well, and you also can't rely on Samsung or Qualcomm's announcements alone as a justification for anything. As a brief reminder, 4 years ago, Qualcomm announced that they had a great new way to do wireless charging through metal bodies that has never been deployed on a single device ever.
No, and if you look at it, it's so damn expensive, it never will be.
Right. So it's, you know, the announcement by Qualcomm is not, you know, there's still so much work that needs to be done after an announcement from Qualcomm that just, you know, there's no, and we've seen several times where companies have rushed to be the first to support, you know, Qualcomm's latest processor. And because they rushed, the phone's a piece of crap when it comes out. And it takes, you know, several software updates before it's even usable. I think LG is actually guilty of several of those.
yeah, I remember the LG NVIDIA days, and I just want to cry.
So, Jerry, you could take a moment, collect your thoughts there and collect your emotions. We're going to talk about some Galaxy Watch and some other Galaxy things and some OnePlus things, but I have to take a quick break, and we have to talk about our sponsor for this episode, which is Casper. We all know Casper. We listen to podcasts. We've heard about Casper, but the problem is we aren't all sleeping on Caspers yet. So what is Casper? If you've never heard of them, it's a sleep brand. It's not just a mattress brand. They make expertly designed products that help you get your best rest one night at a time. So they're cleverly designed. They are designed to mimic human curves and provide support for all kinds of bodies. You know, we have more than one person sleeping on many of our beds. It's made for everybody. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface. See, it's not a mattress, it's a sleep surface with just the right amounts of sink and bounce. It also has a breathable design that helps you sleep cool. I don't know about you guys, but I do not sleep cool. Something like this is really going to help, even in, you know, the frigid temperatures of Seattle. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 out of 5 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite sleep surface. Casper also offers a wide array of other products, so it's not just a mattress and see you later. They also have pillows and sheets and everything like that to ensure an overall better sleep experience. And no matter what you buy, big or small, you're going to see affordable prices because they cut out the middleman. They sell directly to you. They also offer hassle-free returns. They'll come and pick it up if you don't like it for whatever reason. And you can be sure your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. Sleep on it for 100 nights, not 100 days like it was before. That doesn't make any sense. 100 nights you can sleep on it. So when you go to buy your new Casper mattress, you can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/AC and using code AC at checkout. Terms and conditions apply, of course. Again, that is casper.com/AC and offer code AC at checkout. Get $50 off select Casper mattresses. Thank you very much, Casper, for supporting the Android Central podcast.
Hey, Andrew.
Yes?
I sleep cool. I do everything cool. Just wanted to let you know.
Too cool for school, right, Jerry?
Yep, with my sunglasses on at night.
Well, you know what else is cool?
We're going to get Russell, a picture of Jerry in bed with sunglasses later today, and this is going to be your fault.
You know, I'll look back at my photos from previous Google I.O.s. I bet we have that photo.
I'm sure you have a picture of me sleeping somewhere with my sunglasses on.
So, you know what else is cool, Russell, is the Samsung Galaxy Watch, right?
It's true. I'm a fan. I've been using it for not quite a full week now.
Okay, because I've been using mine for over a couple weeks, I think. I can't even remember. A couple weeks now. And is yours asking you to do torso twists all the time?
Mine has not once asked me to do torso twists, but that could be because I spent a lot of time on my bike.
Oh, yeah.
And so like by like 9 o'clock in the morning, my little fitness gauge thing is already pretty full.
And I'm sure that I could turn that off, but I just haven't figured it out. And it's turned into a little inside joke. And, you know, I do some torso twists sometimes.
What it does tell me is when I'm sitting on an airplane for 4.5 hours and cannot get up and move anywhere, that I should really get up and stretch my legs. But instead of being like, hey, you haven't sat for, like, you've been sitting for an hour, it actually keeps a running tally. So like after the first, cause like all of the other smartwatches, they're like, hey, it's been an hour. You should get up and move. And I'm like, I'm on an airplane. You should, you know, go away. But I noticed this on the flight home yesterday was it told me that every hour, but it just kept the counter going. So by the time I actually got up at the end of the airplane, at the end of the ride, it was like, hey, by the way, it's been 4 hours and 32 minutes since you've gotten up. And this is not cool.
Oh my God. I want to wear one for a week and see if I can't make its head explode.
Yeah, you're going to start getting a scrolling timer.
Yeah, 37,000 hours since you've stood up.
Yeah.
So, you, Russell, you have 46 millimeter, and I have the 42 millimeter. I'm finishing up writing my review. We're kind of talking about this a little early, as my review should be up in the next couple days. Depends on when this episode goes out, but it's not too much of a secret. It's not under embargo or anything of that sort. I think that it's a darn good watch. It's, I mean, the reason why it's so good is that it's basically the same as their last generation of watches. They didn't, Samsung didn't dramatically change it. They pretty much just combined the Gear S3 with the Gear Sport and kind of slimmed it down just a tiny bit. It's just a little bit more svelte. Although, Russell, I'm using the 42. What do you think about the slimness or lack thereof of the 46? It's a pretty big watch.
You know, the most recent thing that I've had to compare it to is the TicWatch Pro, which kind of got critically panned as being a bigger watch. You know, it sits kind of taller on your wrist and it's a little on right. The wider side. And the Galaxy Watch, the 46 millimeter one, is definitely bigger than the TicWatch Pro. It feels bigger on the wrist, and it's also a little heavier. But much like the TicWatch, I don't really mind it after, you know, a couple hours of wearing it. You adjust pretty quickly, especially if it's something that you find yourself using a lot. And it's really worth having the larger size if you want the battery to really last you multiple days.
Yeah, so hit me with your battery thoughts, and I'll let you know what the 42 is like.
If I've got the display set to its always on mode, where it kind of dims when I'm not using it, and then but it still has kind of color information on there, and I'm just kind of using it all day long, I've gotten like 3 whole days, including workouts, and a lot of times the active cycling workouts, they just drain the battery of any fitness watch. So I'm getting like 3 full days, with that. And I haven't done it yet with the active display off. I bet with the active display off, I could push this thing to a 4th day.
Yeah. So I too keep the watch face on because I think that it's dumb to have a watch that when you put your wrist down, the screen turns off. Because there are a lot of times where you just want to glance down and you want to see that you have a watch on,
and
not
weirdly,
just a dead screen.
That's the default on this when you take it out of the box.
Yep.
Which
because
I don't
battery
remember,
life.
I don't remember that being the case with the last generation of watches from Samsung.
I would have to factory reset mine because I do not recall whether it did it or not. But yes, you're right. So on these, they turn it off by default. It's on a 30-second timeout, I believe. You can kind of strike a middle ground and you can turn it up to, I think, like a 2 or a 5 minute timeout. So, you know, any time you really have moved your wrist around, you got a few minute buffer. But I keep mine on all the time. I've also been using this nice mechanical looking watch with 3 different complications and a sweeping second hand that actually keeps the sweeping second hand going even in always on display, which I know just destroys the battery life. But with that type of a watch face, if you have a mechanical looking one that has movement on it, I've been making it just over a day on this guy. So I make it, you know, from one morning to the, you know, sleep wearing it at night for sleep tracking. And then the next morning I can make it through the morning, and kind of around noonish or so, it's going to start really bothering me that it's, you know, super low single digit percentage and I've got to throw it on a charger. So that's, I mean, this only has a 270 milliamp hour battery in it. That's not that surprising. It's definitely never going to die in a single day. It doesn't matter what you do. It's not going to die, you know, morning to night. But it's not, I mean, if you're going to keep the screen on the small one, you're going to, if you do sleep tracking, of course, it will make it from one morning to the next morning, no problem. But anything beyond that, you have to start tweaking things a little bit. And if I turn off the display, I get more like Russell's battery life. I can do 3 days with the screen turning off every 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think the watch face has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
How fast do they charge?
Slow.
Yeah, they're not fast. I think most people charge them overnight, so it doesn't matter like a whole lot, but the TicWatch definitely charges faster.
Mine's about 2.5 hours.
See, I remember Samsung made the first Android Wear watch the Gear?
Gear Live.
Yeah, Gear Live.
Gear Live.
And I wore it at night for sleep tracking as well. The apps weren't great back then, but it charged back to full when I was taking my shower in the morning. You know,
yeah,
15, 20 minutes.
I think that's Russell. To Russell's point, they're designing it to not get very warm while you're charging it and charge overnight, basically, which is a problem for me. So if it's something that it makes it about 30 hours or so on a charge, that means I'm charging in the middle of the day And I'm kind of trying to do a little opportunistic charging thing here because, Jerry, if I just take it off in the morning as I get out of bed, put it on the little charger and go take a shower, come back, the thing is added like not even 10% battery. It's almost like I might as well have just kept on wearing it and got my little, you know, my activity counted.
Yeah.
And that's really surprising to me for such a, for such a small battery, it's a little annoying. I'm slightly upset by the battery life only because it's easy for Samsung to weasel around in it and its messaging because it has the 46 millimeter and it can, they're both, you know, the same Galaxy Watch. But when they make these huge claims about 4 or 5, whatever days of battery life, that's clearly the case for the 46 and not for the 42.
And it's important to keep in mind that the battery claims are for the 46 non-LTE version.
Yes.
You know, the LTE version is going to be different just by having the extra hardware. And as we've seen from every other version of an LTE watch, the reason that this thing has the bigger battery is that they need this thing to survive a day in LTE mode. We haven't done any of the testing there yet, but I bet it gets almost exactly one day when it's in LTE mode.
Right, because it doesn't have a bigger... The LTE model just has the LTE in it. It doesn't change anything about it.
Right.
When it comes to batteries and charging, though, Samsung is the company I trust most from, you know, their past days and what they might have learned. So I'll bet there's a reason they want to charge it slow. And like Russell said, they don't want it to get hot. So I'm not going to question that because they do know their stuff.
Yeah, I get it. It's just I think the only reason I'm upset about the charging speed is because the battery life's not great if you use always on. So, but you can do, as you expect, Samsung Watch allows lots of customization. You can make this thing a crazy fitness watch,
which
you
I did.
You can make it do crazy fitness stuff and update you on all kinds of other things. You can put different apps and stuff. Please don't put any apps on here. They all suck. You can watch YouTube videos. Don't watch YouTube videos. They suck. You can do all kinds of different stuff with these widgets. You can line up a dozen widgets to the right of your watch face that all update all the time. The way I have mine set up is I've got a weather one and then a step count one, heart rate, which can measure every, I set it to 10 minutes. You can do it constantly if you want. I have a workout one, a sleep record run one, and then they have a cool altimeter barometer that I don't really use, but it just looks cool. So they've got a whole bunch of different stuff that you can add. Let's see. Shoot, they've got well over a dozen different ones, world clocks, and they can help you track your food, track your water and caffeine intake. You can do all kinds of step challenges. You can have a CNN news briefing if you want because you hate yourself. You can have reminders. You can do all this different stuff. You can have it set up exactly how you want. So obviously the battery life gets better the less, you know, constantly updating widgets you have on your watch. And that kind of comes down to the point of it. It's, this watch is only worth the $330 to $380 if you see something within all of these options that you're like, yes, I need to have that on my wrist at all times. Because if you take out all the widgets and things like that equation and the fitness tracking, if you're just looking for kind of a dumb smartwatch, you can get way cheaper, way simpler options from Wear OS.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I've been using it in earnest for the past week, and there are a couple of things that I dig. I still really love the rotating top crown, or not crown, but yeah. I love the rotating bezel as a navigation thing. I don't understand why there isn't a Wear OS watch that does this, because it's brilliant, in my opinion.
Got to be a patent related.
It has to be, yeah, because it's, I mean, this is the way to do it. You know, the crown, the moving crown on the side of the Apple Watch and a couple of the Wear OS watches, like, no thanks. This is way better to be able to do. But outside of that and the wireless charging, which I do appreciate, I would keep using my Tick Watch over this.
Yeah. I mean, and you're somebody that's currently using a lot of the fitness aspects too.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the things that it does really well. It actually kind of, it surprised me, some of the things that it does. And once I learned how they worked, I was pretty happy, but they're things that I can largely replicate elsewhere. So they're not things that I find myself feeling like I absolutely need in order to use the watch.
If you, let's say you use a Galaxy Note or a Galaxy S8, whatever, and that's the phone you use every day, all that fitness stuff will tie in very, very well with the health app on your phone, right?
You can install Samsung Health on anything now. Samsung Health on my... I have the most convoluted setup right now because I use Strava for all of my cycling measuring stuff because it's like a weird social network for bike people. But it also reports directly to Google Fit, which is cool. So I, on the watch, because the watch doesn't have a Strava app, I use the Samsung Health cycling measuring thing on the watch. And then I do my ride. And when I'm done, it syncs the Samsung Health stuff to the Samsung Health app on my Pixel 2, which then syncs it to Strava, which then syncs it to Google Fit.
Well, the obvious solution is to wear a Wear OS watch on your other wrist.
I'm pretty sure the obvious solution is to contact a therapist at this point. But yeah, it was, you know, it's a really convoluted way to tie it all together, but it works, and it works in a way that that other platforms Wear OS, if Wear OS were in this situation, or if Apple Watch were in this situation, Apple and Google would look and be like, no, it's okay, we don't support that. Or they would look for a direct thing.
I'd always heard that, you know, Samsung's T's and watches do health and fitness great. And, you know, I'm interested in that, but only pay attention because I want to see some options for people with mobility issues. And maybe Samsung will be the first one to do that. But that's how I was wondering, you know, how it ties in with the phone, because that's important to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be willing. I mean, it exports to other places, but you have to be willing to really use Samsung Health as your first dashboard, and then a lot of the stuff gets mirrored elsewhere. So if you don't have a strong preference to one or the other, then yeah, it's totally great. I've heard, in talking to a couple people have said that the GPS isn't quite as good for your tracking and your pace information as, you know, a dedicated running watch from Garmin or something like that. And I'm not surprised by that. But with everything else that the thing does, it's not a watch for somebody to train for a marathon with, or, you know, set all kinds of records and things like that. It's a capable, you know, more than capable watch for what most people need as far as health and fitness tracking goes. And it's just one of many, you know, little upgrades that they have with their display quality and the hardware quality and the, you know, the ecosystem of Samsung Health. It just all kind of ties together that this is a general purpose smartwatch in the greatest sense, and that it can do all of these different things. It's not a Fitbit that's, you know, focused on the fitness stuff and kind of does the smartwatch, you know, the other smartwatch stuff separately. This does all of the things, which is... I think it's a mark in the positive column for Samsung.
Oh, yeah.
But for that reason, the thing is a little more expensive. I mean, so it's $380 for the 46 millimeter one. Like, that's really starting to get up there a little bit, unless you're really sure what you want a smartwatch for.
And we've gotten a fair bit of criticism from owners of previous watches who are considering this as an upgrade, that Samsung Pay is nowhere to be found on this thing.
Well...
Dun dun dun! Which it has NFC Samsung Pay,
right? But not the real Samsung Pay. The old school, you know, the magnetic stripe emulation, MST stuff is nowhere to be found here. And I can't say that I'm surprised. The MST stuff is, you know, we are farther now from MST being the mainstream than we were 2 years ago, but it's still used a lot here. So it's hard, you know, there, I definitely go to places where the chip or NFC is definitely the default in like the city, but I'm just enough in the suburbs here that there are still plenty of shops that I go into where I kind of have to blink at them for a second where they're like, oh no, the chip thing doesn't work. You got to swipe.
Yeah, this is a really tough one. Samsung said to me straight up that this is not, you know, off the record or anything. It's just a size constraint in these watches. If you want MST, it's extra space taken up in a small package, especially in the size of the 42 millimeter. And it would have been kind of a funky situation to have the 46 have MST, but not the 42. And in the case of the 46, they already want to be able to have LTE in there. They want to have this larger battery that's whatever, 470 something milliamp hour. They just said, yeah, this is not a big enough addressable market for us to cripple every single one of the watches so that, you know, this small number of people have it. And here's the thing, if anybody knows, Samsung knows how many people are using MST.
Absolutely.
And so that's what, I mean, they still keep it in the phones. There isn't as much of a size constraint, you know, when you're talking about a watch versus a phone for the same technology. Remember that the technology is the same and it has to fit in a device that's dramatically smaller. But I get the point that, yes, there are still card swipers out there. Yeah, okay. I don't know. It's like it's one country in some parts of the country that haven't adopted it. Samsung can't be putting in features just for you.
Well, it had to end sometime. You know, there's actually some sort of law that, you know, all new machines in the United States have to be, you know, chip and pin. No more magnetic stripe technology. So it's going to die. And, you know, maybe Samsung killed it in the watch a year or two before everything was ready, but we shouldn't really be surprised.
Well, I mean, we should have seen the writing on the wall when the Gear Sport came out,
right?
And it didn't have MST in it. Nobody really complained because the Gear S3 Frontier was still available. And by the way, go buy a Gear S3 Frontier, still available, cheaper than the 46 millimeter Galaxy Watch, going to get the same software update, still has MST. Like, there's nothing about this new 46 millimeter Galaxy Watch that should make you really, like, if you're the kind of person that needs MST, then buy the Gear S3 Frontier, use it for a couple of years. By the time you're done using it, you know, the magnetic stripe readers are going to be even tougher to find.
Yeah, 'cause I had a lot of people that disagreed with me on Twitter when I said it's fine to get rid of it, that everywhere takes, you know, anywhere that has a pay terminal that you can use hardware with will take the NFC. Apparently, I was wrong. Everywhere around here does, so I assumed that...
I mean, there are lots of places where they have the new chip terminals, but they, for whatever reason, haven't set things up to do NFC. So they have like a new terminal that may, you know, have chip and swipe. But I don't know. This just seems like the most pedantic of arguments that really is really getting into the weeds. Is it not?
I think so. But, you know, a lot of people that are going to be listening don't feel that way. So.
Yeah, I just think that in general, and we have this weird situation in the U.S. where payments are kind of a cluster. You go to all major European countries, it's like chip across the board, and a vast majority of places have NFC as well because they've been using NFC credit cards, like actual physical cards that have NFC in them. And so... all it takes is the support in the country from Google Pay and Apple Pay for the banks to then enable it for everywhere.
Yeah.
And what you have to remember is that the U.S. is kind of a holdout in terms of the magnetic stripe credit card. And to that point, Samsung is the only one, because it has an exclusive on this, that's doing the what do you call it? It's spoofing or whatever of the, I guess that's a bad word. They're doing virtualization of swiped cards. It's not like this is something, it's not like MST is available in every Android phone you go get today. Like, it's available in Samsung flagships from the last 5 years. Galaxy S6, 7, 8, 9, and the various notes. So you're talking about like a dozen phones that have this feature and a couple watches. It's such a narrow, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's such a narrow need that I just don't feel it. But, you know, maybe I'm just a crazy American, not American. I don't know.
At Andrew Martinick.
Okay, that's a great place to leave it, because you know what? payment systems, and I've been looking at Twitter here, and I'm watching Elon Musk smoke a blunt on a podcast, and it's really just getting me nice and relaxed.
If we had told Jerry that was an option, this podcast would have been very different.
Yeah, but maybe I hope Elon Musk has some Agent Orange in it or something.
Oh, goodness. All right, that's a great place to leave it. Samsung Pay and Google and Galaxy Watch and all sorts of things. And by the way, congratulations to Daniel Bader. He is not on this podcast because he had a beautiful baby girl just a couple days ago, and he's going to be doing a dad thing for a couple weeks. So you may not hear him on the podcast for a little bit, but he is around, and him and his daughter and his wife are doing fantastically. So congratulations to Daniel. And congratulations to you guys for showing up to this podcast and, you know, just keeping it cool.
You know what, you guys, listeners, everyone, you guys should take a minute and send Daniel congratulations to Daniel.Bader at Android Central. Like, he's not at work right now, and I want him to feel bad when he picks up his phone to, like, check in to make sure that we're all still, like, doing our jobs. So that when he checks his email inbox, it's just flooded with congratulations. So do that. It's
a beautiful baby girl. I love kids, and I'm so happy for Daniel. So yes, hit him up. Tell him it's great.
And then, you know, when Daniel is all old, then his daughter can start working for Android Central and
we're gonna put
start
her to
whipping
work.
Us into shape.
Yep.
We're not waiting for her to get old.
Hey, easy there. I don't know what child labor laws are like in Canada, but
Kindle Kids Edition. I've already got one on the way.
All righty, Jerry, Russell, thank you very much. Jerry, where can they tweet at you?
At GB Hill, GBHIL. And
what about you, Russell? How can they tweet at you?
I'm actually against all forms of social networking. Don't message
me.
I'm at Russell Holly on everything.
Oh. Yes, Jerry.
I thought he said he was against it. I was going to say, how do you get it? Well, that's not fair.
Why? Because we told you it wasn't an option?
Yes. That's all right. Everybody, Russell loves political arguments. Just tweet at him all the time.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, actually, just talk to Russell about your favorite Google Pixel 3 XL conspiracy theory.
I can't wait to get those angry tweets from whoever that YouTuber is that made that video. It's going to be the best.
No, he's going to make a YouTube video about it.
It's going to be the best angry thing that I've gotten ever since the time I picked a fight with that Unbox Therapy guy.
No cops have busted into any Gizmodo offices or prior Gizmodo offices, so I don't believe it.
Jeez. Okay. We're going to call it. I will be gone next week. I assume that these hooligans will be able to pull together some sort of a podcast. But until then, oh, goodness. I'm going to come back from vacation just to make sure that this stays on the rails. But for now, episode 396 is finished. We will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.